Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Chertltau from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from Bratislava, Slovakia is Alan Delon. Alan is Global Remediation Program Manager for Dell. He'll be speaking at the 2020 European Compliance and Ethics Institute, which will be taking place from the 16th to 18th March in Amsterdam. His topic there is post-ethics investigations, what's next, remediation or recurrence. Alan, thanks for speaking at that meeting, and thanks for joining us today for the podcast.
You're welcome, Adam. Delighted to be here and looking forward to our conversation.
As am I. Now, we're going to be talking today about what your topic is at the meeting, which is post-ethics investigations. Now, Dell has evolved how it has handled ethics issues over the years, you explained to me. What was the original process?
Okay, so we have very talented and passionate teams of investigators at Dell, and we've had that for many years, and their primary focus is and always has been what happened and who was involved. You know, the what and who, that's their bread and butter, so to speak. They gather the evidence, they make recommendations to local HR and local legal counsel with regards to what the employee discipline should be if it is a substantiated issue, and then it's time to go on to the next case. Days to close is a key metric for us, so it's very important to deal with an ethics case thoroughly, but at the same time to do so quickly and ensure that it's not leaked outside the company and that the complainant or reporter, where applicable, can see that action is being taken. So given the size of the company, we have plus 140,000 people, there's always going to be something going on. So with that, the investigators, you know, they did not really have time to undertake large remediation projects, so they needed to move on to the next urgent case. And sure, there often was some quick fixes, and even the removal of bad actors in itself can and often was game-changing, but the decision was to add to this process in the form of adding the remediation program on top.
Now, what led the company to identify the need for this different approach?
Sure. So basically, our general counsel and our chief ethics compliance officer felt, you know, they were seeing the same or similar types of cases month after month, hearing similar sets of facts. So they asked to go a step beyond employee discipline and truly began to analyze, you know, what the root causes of these cases, these matters were. And this led then to the remediation program. So really, I think this will probably resonate with a lot of our listeners today, that we at Dell were dealing with occasional, let's call them deja vu moments after an investigation. And I think this applies to most organizations. You know, questions like, haven't we heard this story before? How did this happen again? You know, they're being asked around boardrooms globally every day. So right now, I'm sure there's someone having a very difficult conversation along those lines. And if you don't invest in remediation, you'd leave yourself open to a vicious circle of reoccurrence. And the key aim of the remediation program is basically to reduce our investigators' caseload, or at the very least, those cases that are of similar nature to what we've seen before.
Yeah, you don't want to see the same thing happening just with different people each time. So how does the new approach work?
Sure. So the new approach, and, you know, it's like a lot of it is staying the same. We're just adding on top. So in ethics investigations are focused on the what and the who. So whereas remediation is all about the how, the new approach continues to allow the investigators, even empowers them more to remain specialized and focused on the investigations. Essentially now this two-stage process where the remediation team, by and large, functions separately from the investigators after the investigators do their handover to us. So this handover piece is crucial and it's always of a really high standard, which has really positioned us for success. So how are these handovers initiated? Well, we have defined criteria where our investigators know what to watch out for in terms of potential remediation projects. First and foremost are what we refer to as our tier three financial impact case. Well, these are the ones that have the most material dollar exposure. So these absolutely have to be flagged to us, but also where there's internal controls gaps or maybe regional teams or the need for enhanced tone at the top or a lack of management oversight, maybe that's been observed. When the investigators are going through their investigation. So they need to flag that to us also when they're closing the investigation. And they do so in the Navex tool that we're using. And this is a mandatory field for our investigators upon case closure, remediation requested, yes or no. So then I get sight of a weekly report. And when, you know, our project load permits, we do a prioritization exercise. So we assess the dollar and reputational risk, but also the scope. We determine if it's like going to be one country or the impact is maybe global, regional, or if it's just one part of the business impacted. And this all kind of helps facilitate our kind of prioritization exercise. And if it does get prioritized, we work with the investigator to understand the facts of the investigation more deeply. And we begin at this stage the process of identifying gaps and gathering documentation. The investigators are also positioned at this stage to point us in the right direction with regard to who in the business we should work and partner with from the remediation side. So then we need to go and explain remediation to the business. So we have an official definition that we call it the identification of gaps in systems, processes, and people that may enable misconduct, followed by a guided implementation of business-owned sustainable improvements. So that's very much a mouthful. So to kind of paraphrase it further, I refer to it simply as the cleanup after the investigation. So, and certainly what I'm stressing in these initial conversations with the business is this is all about the go forward. So we acknowledge the investigation is closed, and now that we're looking to make sure we don't have the same issues again. It's a very, very different conversation than what the investigators may have had previously with the business. And while generally the bad actors, let's call them, would have maybe already exited the business by the time remediation starts, the business contact I'm perhaps having that initial conversation with is potentially the person's former leader. And given that they have not been speaking to me as part of the investigation, lines are, I would argue, they're less blurred. I think this can facilitate a more focused, go forward conversation. Certainly the conversations I'm having should be, let's call it, less emotional. So as mentioned, we are now focusing on the how. The who and the what has been covered already. So we are now going ahead and deconstructing and analyzing the schemes to identify the gaps in policies, people or processes that enable the misconduct to occur in the first place. And that becomes part of the fix, i.e. just actually remediate these gaps. So if we look at the fraud triangle, which is a concept I'm sure many of our listeners are familiar with, so we have motive and pressure, with rationalization and opportunity. So we're not really going to be able to influence motive and rationalization all the time, but opportunity we can aim to at least make it more difficult, if not impossible. And the principles of internal controls are always, foundational, along with the Dell model of accountability, which is key. And we have, if you break it, you fix it mentality here at Dell. So, and generally our final recommendations we build around three different buckets. The first of those is accountability, and that's all about ensuring senior management commitment to team member and third party discipline. Then we have tone and awareness, which is all about resetting the tone, not just at the top, but also in the middle and the edges. And then we have controls. So this is probably the more standard principle, but controls then will be defining and deploying the go forward preventive and also detective control mechanisms going forward. So really what's key for remediation is fact finding. So this can be through review of documentation, but it's more typically spent when you're interviewing and talking to people. So to be able to make the recommendations, you need to truly understand the business, the processes, the dependencies, the teams they interact with, and to determine who the decision makers is. So you don't really get this unless you really have those conversations. And if you don't do this, take some shortcuts, you might get some quick wins, but you won't leave the really sustainable process improvements that we're aiming for. So preparation for these calls, and they're often with executives and business leaders, is key. On the credibility side, you need to really demonstrate the understanding of the topic and issue, and you need to get the info you need from them. And then you have to actually be able to go and influence them, so you'll get the buy-ins for the ideas and recommendations. With regards to influencing, I would say that generally people, especially the leaders of the affected organizations, are super engaged. They want to get it fixed. No one likes, say, the negative spotlight, and they want to be able to go and tell their team, their boss, hey, we've had this issue. We've subsequently worked with ethics, and we've got a plan in place, and they were confident that this is going to remediate it. And of course, sometimes it's not going to be so simple. It's not going to be just one team or one org that is, fully responsible. But in general, we have this, one team approach across the business to benefit the greater good for the company. So we often have teams coming and working together, to fix things and make things better going forward. One thing I'd like to point out here as well is that, for remediation program manager, they can't always be expected to be an SME for all aspects of the business. You will, it's your role is to apply the controls, principles, and so on, and in the fact finding and the conversations. But often the best solutions can come from the business themselves. What you can find yourself doing is facilitating the discussions and the brainstorming sessions. So things will get complicated with different teams and different leaders having different opinions and on the best way to solve the go forward. And then you need to draft what the management action plans are, bringing the best points together, and ideally with minimum impact to the velocity of the business. Otherwise, you're going to get pushback. And sometimes this means you can't boil the ocean, and that's something I have learned from myself. We've had a few false starts, a few dead ends. You can't always fix everything in one go, and you need to take a more smart risk approach at times, and then get that alignment and ownership with the business, because in the end, the business is going to own these improvements. They're going to be the responsible for maintaining them. To make sure they actually go in action, you need to establish regular meetings for status updates and reviews of the actions for each step. We've also recently piloted the implementation of more formal management action plans through the Archer tool that we have. And this is something that the business was already familiar with from internal audits. So the concept really is the same, just audit maps would derive from audits, while ethics compliance maps will derive from ethics investigations. So by doing this in this more formal way, it does help more accountability, to drive that more accountability on the business side. And there's certainly less slippages than on timelines. I take some of the workload off the remediation program itself. It's some of the handholding, let's call it, so the business kind of steps up and owns it more. And you know, when they have that ownership there, you know, it does also help the sustainability, because this is something that, you know, they have helped design and drive, and something that they will want to ensure is still operational, be it 6 months from now or a year from now.
So it sounds as if the whole process really is designed not just to figure out what went wrong in this incident, but in the broader sense, and really to get management wholly a part of the process of figuring out how do we ensure that this doesn't happen again.
Yeah, exactly. And because they need to own it going forward. So the management is key here. If they don't feel part of it, they're less likely to sustain it going forward.
So one of the aspects of doing this the right way is root cause analysis, not just looking at what this person did, but what you're already doing is what is the situation there. Now, getting to the roots is difficult. What do you see as the key to success?
Yeah, so root cause is absolutely key. So the process, you know, the five whys, it's key. And I think probably a very simple example, and I'm sure people have heard it before, but it is something I find very memorable, partially because I'm not going to name names, but it's actually happened to a friend of mine, in that his car wouldn't start. So this is a problem statement. So let's apply the five whys to this. So the first why would be, say, the battery is dead. The second why would be the alternator is not working. The third why would be the alternator belt is broken. The fourth why would be, hey, it's old and should have been replaced a long time ago. And then the fifth why would be the person was skipping their annual yearly maintenance service check. And I would say that we can generally add further than five, but at this fifth stage, you're really getting into the, let's call it the realms of a process, i.e. something that's not working well or doesn't exist. And we actually track root causes in our remediation efforts now. We've designed a list based on some of the issues we were seeing, and we benchmark this by going out and sense checking with some other companies. So, and we've broken that out between internal controls, awareness, governance, and culture, and we have subsections in each. But what do I see really as a success in actually doing the action analysis? So some tips would be, you know, you absolutely can't rush it. If you do, you end up regretting it later. It's okay for a root cause to have sub root causes. You write them down, ask questions like, so what, how big of an impact does this cause, and compare it to your problem statement. Even doing a whiteboarding session with a colleague is sometimes useful to generate those ideas.
Well, Alan, thank you so much for sharing these insights here and for sharing them again come March at the 2020 European Compliance and Ethics Institute. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen today. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA saying, I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspective.